So Bond, James Bond, I have to ask Ashley, Mike Carlson, have either of you ever heard anyone in your entire life introduce themselves with their last name first? Mike, have you ever heard, have you ever met anybody in your entire, is this an odd way to introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course it's an, yeah, I've never heard this. I don't think, I mean, like maybe a very old person might do it if it's like a very kind of a formal thing, but even just like saying the last name twice is, I think it's sort of a bizarre behavior.
Ashley, is this a thing in Canada? Have you heard this?
Oh, I see you two don't date enough men.
Oh, what?
What? This is, you know, we all belong to a really? Post-James Bond generation. Like, we all lived in a world where James Bond was always quite a popular thing. So this is like a good, like, 21-year-old move at a bar.
Are you serious? So have you had a man?
A million, yes.
Whoa.
Yeah, and they do it with, like, the eyebrow or the cocktail. Yeah, 100%. I was expecting you to be like, oh, yeah, when I was 22, this was my move.
I have never heard this before.
Much sense to me now.
I see that the two of you have now new moves to try out in your late in life bachelor phase.
I guess we do. Yes. I guess we do. And you know what? This is like no better way to start this podcast. Welcome everybody to Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason from Kansas with Love Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or James Bond movie and teach you everything you need to know about it in about an hour.
And today we have a very special guest. You've already heard him. Some people might say he's an actor. Some people might say he's the mm-hmm. host of Podcast The Ride, the mm-hmm. podcast. And others might introduce him as Carlson, Mike Carlson. Welcome, Mike Carlson, to the podcast.
Hi, I'm here. And I'm thinking about all the different like straw hat guys. I picture them like kind of like a straw hat, or like that like fancier straw hat, like boating mm-hmm. hat. And they kind of like
bury that.
Yeah. And it's like, it's almost like that Amy Schumer sketch, the Hello, M'lady sketch, I always think of. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Where like, it's like, that's a very common like dude who's just like, hello, M'lady. And like his whole mm-hmm. thing is like, he's like formal or something. And I get it now that certain people pick gimmicks for when they're talking to females at a bar.
Well, we got to say, you know, this is the episode that we are kicking off our James Bond Jamboree, as we were talking about it. So basically on this podcast, whenever a Bond film is going to celebrate an anniversary, mm-hmm. we are going to talk about it. This is the 60th anniversary of From Russia with Love. This movie is 60 years old. And, you know, James Bond is a smooth man with the ladies. So I guess it makes sense that every 20-year-old, 1-year-old man we've now discovered uses this as his pickup line. But mm-hmm. Mike, I wanted to ask you, what is your like James Bond history? Like, how many of the Bonds have you seen? Have you seen a lot of them? Because when I was reaching out to you about being on this podcast, you had mentioned that you'd never seen From Russia with Love. So you watched it for the first time for this podcast. Yes. But what is your James Bond resume, if you will?
Well, I'm a bit ashamed because I know all the Pierce movies. I know the Daniel Craig movies. And then I've seen here and there a Goldfinger. I've seen Moonraker. But it does feel like now that I'm thinking about it, like I should have gone back. It's James Bond is nerdy, but it's not in a way. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, it is nerdy.
They're very dad. They're dad movies.
Yes, it's dad movies. But like dads can be nerds. And especially, sure. Like, even old dads, like now dads are nerds. I'm a father now and clearly a nerd, but like our dads were nerds for like sports mm-hmm. and other things. It is nerdy behavior to like be so obsessed with sports and James Bond movies, but it is something where I was like, ah, you know what? Now I got to do the James Bond rewatch. I have a child and that's like part of it. And then they have to get into World War II after that, I guess. That's part of being a dad.
And like trains.
Trains. Oh, trains as well. I'm a collector. So yeah, when I get into trains, it's going to be over as far as space is concerned. But I think like seeing GoldenEye and then playing GoldenEye is like my strongest James Bond.
That is a lot of people's gateway entry into James Bond. And it's mm-hmm. funny that like when I find now when I talk to people about James Bond and they bring up GoldenEye, their fond memories are more for the video game than the movie. It's that video game. Because that thing, I think there was no, if you were alive in, was it 97, I think, when it came out? If you were alive in 97, I don't think there was any way you didn't play that game.
No, and it took up just hours of your life. And it was a social thing generally, if you had friends mm-hmm. where you would play it. I was like late to getting N64. And I like got it. And I didn't get it for the sole reason of like getting it and leveling up so I could beat my friends. But that is what happened. I was getting beat a lot. I finally bought an N64 and I leveled up, and then I was much better than everybody. But it was just hours of time wasted in the facility and all the different levels.
Oh my God.
The
library.
The depot. Yeah.
The temple.
Yes.
The one main thing I remember is when you're playing multiplayer on GoldenEye, no odd jobs. There was a rule we always have where you could not be an odd job because, you know, you could shoot over odd job's head and nobody get the headshot.
So I mostly remember Slappers starting that only. One level in the bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
Where you were like inside the bathroom. Yes. Being like, what is this?
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the 10 cent origin of From Russia with Love. Ashley, would you like to explain what that is?
That is the first part of the podcast where Jason is going to tell you all of the who's its and what's its galore in case you go to a James Bond themed cocktail party and somebody has not seen From Russia with Love. So, Jason, what do we got?
All right, so this movie was directed by Terrence Young, who also directed Dr. No, the previous James Bond to this, the very first James Bond movie, and he also directed Thunderball. This had a screenplay by Richard Maybaum. Now, Richard Maybaum, if you're a Bond fan out there, should be pretty famous. He wrote 13 Bond movies. 13. He's wrote more Bond movies than anybody else out of the 25. He actually has a quote about writing Bond movies, so I would love to hear if you agree, if you both of you are writers, so I would love to hear, and creatives.
And we're both famously James Bond writers, of course.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. I loved Mike's novel, From Only Fish with Love.
Uh-huh.
And Ashley, yours, Shut Up, You Stupid British Man.
Yes, exactly.
So Maybaum said, the real trick to writing a Bond is to find the villain's caper. Once you got that, you're off to the races. So do you agree with that? Is it all about finding a villain's gimmick, Mike?
Well, it seems to be the thing that a lot of people remember about the movies, I guess. So if he's talking about caper, meaning like what their intention is or whatever, like I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the weird thing they're stealing.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't want to tell this guy he's wrong, but it's almost to me like, well, what?
He wrote 13 Bond movies, man.
Well, you know what?
Were they good, though?
Yeah, come on. Because it's like, really, what are you remembering here? I remember Tomorrow Never Dies. He's in the car in the back seat. He's got the little thing. And I remember Jonathan Pryce.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's obviously a lot of truth to what he's saying, but also it's just like those are fun little things that you remember from each movie to me ends up being the stuff that I look back more fondly on even than just like what was the plot of the movie.
Well, Maybaum is also credited to a lot of Bond movies because he is the writer who brought a lot of humor to James Bond, because if you ever read the Ian Fleming novels, they're
humorless.
They're very dry. And a lot of them are very much about James Bond's breakfast orders.
Yes, which we do get. Sure. We do get a nice little nod to. He eats very weird food orders.
Doesn't he order like black coffee and figs?
Black coffee, very black.
Very black.
In fact, which I don't know what that means, but I'm not a British man from the 60s. Figs. And yogurt is like his breakfast order. I guess, you know, if you've ever drank black coffee, you know what that's going to do to your system. So maybe that's what this order seems very probiotic to me.
Yes. Yeah. This movie was also adapted by Joanna Harwood, who, by the fun fact, is still alive. She's 93. And she co-wrote this and Dr. No. Of course, this movie is based on the novel From Russia with Love, Ian Fleming, produced by Harry Saltzman and Albert R. Broccoli, starring Sean Connery, Pedro Armendariz, apologies for butchering the name, Loet Lena, Robert Shaw, Bernard Lee.
Lottie Lenny.
Lottie Lenny, yep, sorry, there you go. And Daniela Bianchi. It was released October 1963. It had a budget of $2 million. And Mike, do you want to give a guess of how much money this movie made total?
Oh, good question.
It was a massive hit. But a massive hit for 1963.
I was going to say what that means is like it made $25 million. let's say like what it like made a not adjusted for inflation. What it made like $150 million.
Well, you're a little high, but $79 million.
Okay.
For a $2 million
budget.
That's pretty crazy.
Dr. No. It was a massive hit.
So they said we're going to make 50 more of these.
Yeah, exactly. So because this movie was a massive hit, they rushed Goldfinger into production. Goldfinger comes out the very next year. So this comes out in 63. Goldfinger comes out in 64. So Sean Connery finished this movie basically maybe had a couple of days off and went right to filming Goldfinger.
Also 63.
That's like Turtles
year.
2 and 3.
Yeah.
Sorry. 63 same thing, great year for English television and for comic books.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into this movie. I have some fun facts for both of you, actually. So this movie has tied to a lot of death. I'm going to tell you why.
That's fun.
I know it's a movie about a guy that shoots a lot of people, but so fun facts about this movie. Sean Connery actually said that this was his favorite Bond movie ever to shoot. Mm-hmm. In 2004, Total Film Magazine named this the 9th greatest British film of all time. And it is the only Bond movie to appear on that list. Mm. So does this movie feel very British to either of you?
I would say yes, but in a way that in a contemporary world, I can see the influence of this. So like this From Russia with Love and the way From Russia with Love is shot and paced reminds me a lot of like the 2010 season of Sherlock. And it reminds me a lot of even like Skyfall. So I do think it feels very English and it's had a huge influence on English film in that way.
Well, because of death, President John F. Kennedy had named From Russia with Love his favorite top 10 book I think in 1962. Because of that, that is why the producers made this the second Bond movie after Dr. No. Fun fact as well, I said this movie is tied to a lot of death. This is the last movie that President John F. Kennedy saw at the White House on November 20th, 1963, before he went to Dallas and he was shot.
Wow. That's dark.
I told you it was tied to a lot. Like President JFK is tied to this movie in a lot of weird ways.
Well, I think that's also funny because I know this is not one of your more favorite Bond books. Mm. So I find it interesting that it was his favorite Bond book.
Yeah, the book is not good. I'm sorry. I'm just throwing it out there. The book is really just not great. It's quite a bit different. Well, it's very similar, like the arse going after the Lecter, mm-hmm. like in this movie, but mm-hmm. It deals a lot more with Rosa Klebb and how much she's attracted to Tatiana in the book.
Yeah, Ian Fleming is a massive homophobe.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And in this movie, you know, the Rosa Klebb character, there's like loose hints that she is a lesbian. In the book, she is 100% a lesbian, and she is 100% interested in her and Tatiana falling in bed. But unfortunately, that never happens. So, yeah.
Would have been a very different movie for 1963.
Speaking of a different movie, let's talk about this teaser. So, Mike, going into this, it's, you know, you're watching Sean Connery walk around a bunch of bushes, and the spotlights are everywhere. And then Robert Shaw comes up, kills Sean Connery in the opening minutes. And then they pull off the worst looking rubber mask I have ever seen, sort of pulling a Mission Impossible. What are your thoughts on this teaser from Russia with Love?
Well, it's first of all, I was like, oh my God, it's Robert Shaw. It looks like he's 50, but he's probably 21. That's the first thought I have.
Oh, I'm gonna find out.
Which is a thought I have constantly, which I constantly have this thought when watching old movies. My mind is like shot now, and I just like wander and I just go, I wonder how old this person is sometimes. But I'm watching it, and it's so funny to seeing this now after I have recently watched that last James Bond movie, and it's just so funny seeing the way they would do things back then and the way they would do things now, because everything is just sort of more plainly laid out, and they don't have as dynamic a shots and whatever. And the way I obviously didn't think Connery was dead. I didn't know which twist like it was going to be. Oh, he was wearing like a thick neck, some like a thick skin colored neck brace or something or whatever. Something like that. Or
his tie was made of steel or something.
Yeah. He took a pill that has made his arteries hard. Break. I don't know, but
I would buy that for a Bond.
I can tell you're a Pierce Brosnan era Bond fan if that is one of the fix that you imagine. That's a very like 1990s James Bond solution.
Like 007. This will make your arteries harder. They won't be able to be. You won't be able to be choked.
But a direct gunshot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he does it. He chokes him out, and then. It was just so funny because it almost felt so, in a good way, I mean, this like almost kind of mundane. It was like, well, Sean Connery's dead. Roll the credits. And you're like, or once the mask comes off. And it just felt like such a funny way to do it, just in hindsight of or seeing how things are done. Like, because now it would be like dead, and then like this dynamic shot, bam, and like it was just so laid out in such a casual way. And I actually was a little bit amused by it in that way. This is the way movies were. I mean, not insulting it or anything.
No. That's a great point. Like, you are, because like there would, you know, if the same teaser done in like modern, you know, like if it had done for No Time to Die, it would have been like this epic build up in terms of the editing and the music. And then like, you would have heard like some sort of sting, like the minute you found the mask coming off.
No, you would have heard an Inception fart. Please.
Yeah. Or something. And you're right. Like, and they're just like, no, this is, we're just, here it is. It's up to you to think about it. Whatever. Yeah, it's not James Bond. Well, credits, you know, it's like right to it.
And then it's not Sean Connery.
You know, it's funny because
it's also funny. I was going to say, just funny because like, it's just funny because like you would, in my mind, you'd like want to end the teaser where it is James Bond instead of being like, by the way, not the guy. Oh, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm not as worried then because Bond is alive.
Fun fact, this is like one of multiple James Bond teasers where like, a fake James Bond is killed in the opening teaser.
It's also some of the longest that you go without seeing him. You usually do start with Bond doing whatever business.
Usually Bond is in the teaser. Yeah. This is very true to the book. In the book, Bond doesn't show up in the book until about halfway through the book. The opening, about half of From Russia With Love, the book, is all about Tatiana and Kleb and like figuring out how they're going to get the Lecter and do all that stuff. And then Bond finds out about Tatiana. I swear it's like 100 pages in. It's quite a ways into it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, I think, why I also thought that book was pretty boring, because I was like, where the hell is James Bond in this book? Like, when is he ever going to show up? This is very rare. We were talking about video games earlier. I want to bring up, Mike, do you remember there was a video game based on this movie in the about mid-2000s? And it was like for PlayStation 2. And they got Sean Connery they animated it exactly like this movie. They made it young, and they had old Sean Connery do the voice. It's actually like a pretty fun game. You can find all kinds of gameplay on it. And I don't know why they chose this movie of all the Sean Connery Bond movies.
Because it didn't have Spectre in it.
No, it does have Spectre in it.
Yeah, but not in a way that like all the other Sean Connerys except Dr. No, like Spectre is like a very prevalent, like I think this would be an easier movie to duck around all of that weird legalese with.
Well, that's fair. Although Spectre's not in Goldfinger either. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right, so we get to, of course, there's no song, which is very rare for a James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. That happens in the next one in Goldfinger. This was just sort of a instrumental version. You get to see lots of shaking boobies being projected on. fun thing to note, this is the first Bond film that has John Barry as the primary soundtrack composer. John Barry scored a lot of James Bond movies. And then we get to a chess match between...
Oh, Canada.
Yeah.
Homeland gets a nice little cameo.
Yeah, I think McAdams, the guy that Kronstein is playing, is Canadian.
It's a good Canadian name.
I gotta say, like, if you were like, you know, as your weekly chess matches, as you do, Ashley, if you get a glass of water and at the bottom it says a Spectre little sticker that says report immediately, how are you going to react? Are you going to win the chess match, or was it surprise? I thought he was going to intentionally like tip over his king and forfeit.
Well, I've never won a chess match in my life, so that would be quite something. Suddenly managed at this point to pull that off. I'm not good at chess. I do really like that moment. I like the Spectre iconography, one, because I like cephalopods, and two, I like a John le Carré Cold War era bit of spycraft, and that's what this is. And that leeches out of the Bond franchise kind of post GoldenEye, and then certainly post 1990s. But if I worked for Spectre, I'd probably do whatever they told me.
Well, that is a conversation I wanted to have. I was going to say, like, you know, it is interesting. Yeah, there is a very spycraftian opening. It's like, okay, we got to get after this Bond guy. We're going to go get this Lecter. We're going to set a trap. Number one, number two, number three. But Mike, I want to ask you, how do you feel about this stuff? Again, it's your first time viewing this film, but it, you know, it's Blofeld, it's Spectre, but we're watching this in a post Austin Powers world. We are 20 years post Austin Powers. For you, being the first time, you know, you're seeing like, this is the first appearance of Blofeld. This is the, you know, the first real appearance of like,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And
the cat.
Yeah. And that, you know, how do you feel this still works now that we have the parody of Austin Powers?
Well, it's, well, he's, first of all, he's, even before Austin Powers, it's Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's something we saw, like, we were like, I'm not seeing this guy's face. So, like, I'm used to the hand and the cat. But it's also just like, it almost feels so familiar just in a Marvel Universe movie way where it's like, oh, wow, yeah, okay. Like, I know, like, I knew these things were, like, somewhat serialized, but it's like, oh, yeah, it's like they were doing, like, the Thanos tease here way, way decades before MCU ever did it. So it's like, I wonder, I know, I'm trying to think if there's any other precedent for that in film before this where it was like, we're setting up a bad guy and it's a whole organization and, like, you need to tune in every movie like it's a soap opera.
I was thinking of
Dr. Evil, but yeah, I'm sure maybe there's some version of it, or like there's got to be something where it was like not just a series of movies that they had like a character thread or like teasing things for the next time. But yeah, so I was thinking about all that. And I, yes, of course, was thinking about Austin Powers because so much of this, like, what's her name is definitely like Frau Farbissina.
Rosa Klebb is 100% Frau Farbissina. Yeah.
So I didn't actually know that character, and I go, oh, wow. Okay. So that's even, he's stolen, and Mike Myers stolen even more stuff from this than I even realized.
if you ever get the chance to see You Only Live Twice, which is a Sean Connery one. It's about like three movies ahead of this one. That is the one that Austin Powers stole the most from, because that's the one with the volcano lair, and there's like, I think there are fish with lasers, and it's, there's ninjas everywhere, and there's like a rotating chair, and yeah, like that's the one where he like, he took the whole climax of the first Austin Powers from that movie.
Oh, okay. Well, I will. I'm a father now, and it's part of my duty. So I will be seeing all of these. Yeah.
Someone just showed up at your house with, it was the Stork, and then it was the complete Blu-ray set of all James Bond movies.
Yeah. It was, well, it was actually VHS. I don't know why there were VHSs.
Oh, boy. All right. So now everybody,
man, you know.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know, you have to see it in the original.
The intended
format, VHS with tracking.
Yeah.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. That's something we don't remember now. Remember, like, all the crappy tapes we had to, like, press plus or minus on tracking? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Especially if you recorded. Yeah.
Yeah, especially, yeah, you Gen Z listeners.
Sorry, kids.
Yeah. You used to have to, like, it was like you had to tune into a VHS tape, and if you didn't do it right, it was blurry.
Yeah.
For sure.
I still don't understand what it was. Anyways, we got to talk about, we got to take a break, because right after that, I want to talk about one of my favorite things in this movie, A Very Certain Island. And we're going to talk about that right after this. All right, we're back. Geek History Lesson, talking about From Russia with Love. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite things in this movie, Spectre Island. Yeah, that's right. Spectre has its own island where they like train people to chop off heads and flamethrowers. And it is very much The Prisoner.
Yeah.
Ashley, what did you think about Rosa Klebb? You know, she's secretly left Smersh. She's come to Spectre.
Smersh is one of my favorite things to say. It's
the Russian intelligence.
I know it's only funny because it's a Russian word, but like, I just love every time. Smersh.
and Spectre says to her, hey, we got this whole island where we can just like, here's like 200 guys that are really good at killing people in all various ways.
Yeah.
Pick one. What do you think about this sequence?
I love this sequence. This is so, the best James Bond movies, and I do count this as among the best James Bond movies.
Yeah.
The best James Bond movies know when to pit camp and serious drama together, and this is just camp. Mm-hmm. And Lottie Lenya, if you are not a theater kid, is like a legendary leading lady who worked with Bertolt Brecht and like pioneered European theater. So like, she is so good in this scene, and all of her reactions to like the guys with the flamethrowers, like, she is the reason that this doesn't seem completely silly and ridiculous. I would have picked a flamethrower guy, though. If it was me personally, I would have picked the guy with the flamethrower, because when that comes out of nowhere for the first time, you're like, what the actual heck is going on right now?
You didn't like it when Red Grant stood up and he like was sucking his gut in, and you can 100% tell that Robert Shaw was holding his breath as she hit him.
I think I described him at one point as that guy who looks like Dolph Lundgren.
Oh yeah, he kind of does. By the way, he was 35 in this movie. I looked up his age.
Wow.
And I believe Connery was 36.
Connery looks about 50.
Yeah. All right.
Everyone looks 50.
Everyone. Yeah. So after this, Bond is called into a meeting with M. He's informed that Tatiana has requested Bond's help, and they want to get the Lector, which is a code-breaking machine of the Soviets. And before he leaves, Bond, of course, is equipped with a special briefcase that has a knife and tear gas and 20 gold sovereigns, as they say. By the way, gold sovereign, if you don't know, it's one pound.
Yeah.
Each got, but for inflation, I did the math on this. Bond has $200. That's what he has. He has, so when you think about the end of this movie where he offers that to Robert Shaw, he's like, look, don't kill me. I have 20 gold sovereigns. He's basically being like, I got 200 bucks for you if you don't kill me.
I mean, it's a moderately secret service, so I guess they have a moderate budget.
It's a government, right?
Yeah, government pay.
So this is the first appearance of Q.
Yay!
Desmond Llewellyn, this is the first James Bond movie where he appears.
And then he'll play this role for the next 40 years?
Yeah, he's in like 22 Bond movies, I think, or 20.
I think
Bond
he's in
movies.
The most.
He's in a lot. This character did not exist in the books. Mm-hmm. It was the character in the book was called Major Boothroy, who actually appears in Dr. No. And that actor apparently couldn't come back for this movie. And Desmond Llewellyn was a huge fan of the Bond novels and volunteered to play this part. And then made probably the smartest career decision of his entire life because he was in movies for the next 20 years
as
Q.
Yeah.
So I think that's very interesting there. Mike, let me ask you about this. So this is a James Bond movie. It's very fantastical. We just saw Spectre Island, but the whole plot is pretty realistic. It is just a communist code-breaking machine that is pretty valuable to the West. I mean, do you think that makes this movie better, worse? I mean, how do you feel about this as like, you know, because again, you're coming from this from GoldenEye, right? Where it's a satellite that can fry Cuba off the map. And this is just like a code machine.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real, definitely had a little recalibration of like, oh, this isn't as silly as I want it maybe to be. But then I was like, all right, well, I can handle that. I can deal with that. If it's like more of a realistic movie, it was starting to feel like more like almost like North by Northwest or something, which still ends up kind of in a silly spot. But like, you're like, oh yeah, okay. That like, it doesn't necessarily have to be laser on the moon or something that is the driving force in a James Bond movie. That's true. So yeah, no, I at first was angry. And then I said, oh, it's okay.
Well, it is that thing. It's kind of that thing, right, where it's like very similar to, I want to make this comparison of Adam West as Batman. Like, you know, for years and years and years, everybody was like, we cannot watch that. It is so campy. It is so silly. It is so of the 60s. And now I think it has sort of had a resurgence. And especially for me, I thought the same thing in the 90s. I thought he was silly and goofy. And then as an adult, I watched it and I actually was like, oh, the writing on this is really funny. Like,
was
this
he
is
not almost James Bond?
Yes,
he was. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he almost was. He just didn't want to be tied. They actually offered it to him after Sean Connery left and he turned it down because he said that he was already tied to Batman and he didn't want to be tied to like a character like James Bond. Can you imagine an Adam West James Bond?
No.
No, I've heard him say, I don't believe that story. Maybe I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. Have you seen it like attributed to the producer, like Broccoli family or anything? I have no information, by the way, to say it's wrong. It just seems wrong to me.
So this story comes from Adam West has a biography, which I did actually, fun fact, read last year.
Yeah, we had a really big Adam West moment last year.
Yeah. It's called Beyond.
He's great.
The
I love him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he tells the story in that biography that they flat out, they didn't ask him to audition. They just offered it to him and he turned it down. And I agree with you. I'm like, and this was after Batman was already canceled.
Right.
But he was still airing apparently. So he was still world famous. But yeah, I don't know.
He wasn't in movie. He wasn't in movies. Yeah. Like in what world?
Would you turn that down?
He's completely out of his mind.
These were still kind of B movies at the time when they were being made. Like they were popular, but they were not mainstream the way, like, every time a James Bond movie is announced now, we're like, okay, this is a big thing. The Variety articles are out. Who's going to be cast? You know, kind of the era that we're in right now in a post-Daniel Craig world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're, yeah, they're, like,
that's
it is
interesting.
They were kind of, even, like, it took, they kind of didn't become mainstream, I would almost say, until maybe Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
Like maybe, like even the Roger Moore ones, like they would be big movies or big things, but they were never like the blockbusters that they are now.
Which is why they would produce them so quickly.
Yeah, which is why they would like just crank them out really quickly. Yeah, so okay, Bond.
Look, it's possible.
Yeah. Bond goes to Istanbul. He meets this really rad guy named Ali Kerem Bey, who is the head of the Istanbul unit, played by a Mexican actor, Pedro Armendariz, who, again, remember when I said this movie was tied to death? Mm-hmm. Pedro was terminally ill with cancer while filming this movie, and he refused to give up this role. And they had to shoot all of his scenes in less than 2 weeks. And during the end of those 2 weeks, he was too ill to perform his part. So there are some of his final scenes are performed by a double who is actually the director, Terrence Young.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And Pedro died four months before the release of this film. But this guy was like, I'm going to be in a James Bond movie. I actually think he does a pretty good job.
He does. I mean, we should acknowledge that this was a different time where anybody who was not white could play anyone else who wasn't white. Anyone who was white could play literally anyone they wanted. But if you can move past that, he is really, really fantastic in this film. And you can tell he's having a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he does a really good job. I mean, I like the gag of like all his agents are his sons and they're kind of like everywhere.
I like the back to the salt mine. Mm-hmm. It's like that is a very funny joke for the adults in the room.
What I think is one of the funniest sequences in this entire movie, and I think it is 100% Terrence Young and the producers of this movie watching this sequence and saying, oh boy, this is boring. There is a scene in this movie when he gets to Istanbul. He checks into his hotel.
Oh boy.
He goes and checks in. He goes up the elevator. He goes to this room. And the entire time, this is probably a 3-minute sequence. It doesn't really cut that much. It is just Bond
looking
for audio bugs in his room. Mm-hmm. And the movie is blaring the James Bond theme the entire time. It is like, and he's just like kind of like casually looking behind a curtain and lifting up a lamp. And it's like, and it's like, you're like, what is this? It is like the most dramatic. Oh, did they put the right sheets on my bed I have ever seen in a movie?
Mm-hmm.
So
you can also really tell.
Yes,
that
I also
that lobby,
noted this. Yeah.
You can also tell that the lobby and the room that they put him in are a set because they look very, very. Most of this movie is in real locations.
Yeah.
And those two locations very much look like a white box.
Mike, what did you think about, like, we're here, you know, Kerem Bey, he has like a periscope that he can look inside the Russian embassy that he can only see like one single room. So you got to hope that the guys are meeting in that room or else you're screwed. He can't hear anything in that room. He literally says that. But what do you think about the Istanbul flavor of this? Because, you know, this is not Bond actually in Skyfall returns to Istanbul. Bond goes back to Istanbul several times. But how do you feel about the Kerem Bey and all the Istanbul shenanigans of this movie?
I don't know. It just felt all sort of right to me. I mean, all the movies have, or not most of them, I guess. I shouldn't say all because I haven't seen them, but like the locales are all in interesting places that are not just like a boring American city or whatever. But I don't know. I thought it was all pretty cool. And I was wondering, like, was this shot in Istanbul? Do you know?
Yeah, it was shot in Istanbul. But that's the thing, too. Like, a lot of these early Bond films are kind of travelogues. So they're kind of just picking interesting locations that they know, like, you know, most people in the 1960s have never seen. So that's why they're like going to all these exotic locations. And Istanbul would have been like one of those places. I mean, there's some beautiful like mosques. It's funny, like Ashley and I like actually said this while we were watching the movie, because there's like that beautiful mosque that Bond is like sneaking through and they do this wide shot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we said to ourselves, would this have been like the first time a Western audience would have seen a mosque if you didn't know what it was? Like,
And it's not spoon-fed to you either. It's just presented to you, and like you either kind of know what it is or you don't.
Yeah, you can kind of infer that it's a church.
Yeah, yeah, that it's like a religious location of some type.
But I also want to ask about, Mike, your thoughts on the long belly dancing sequence. You know, belly dancing is the whole set piece of this film. And what did you think about the Romani catfight and the action scenes as Bond and Kerem Bey are enjoying that lovely belly dancing? Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of part of these. It's like, the more we talk about it, the more I go, oh yeah, this is just like, this is dad bait left and right, especially for the time.
Yeah.
When it wasn't, dad didn't have the internet or anything. It was just like dad would go, he'd get to see a cool city. He'd get to see like a lady's midriff, which he's not seeing often.
Oh, no.
A different young lady's midriff, whatever. And then he gets to see like a guy in a suit murder people. And it's just like, this is dad heaven. So, it's like it feels right on to me, you know, as far as being something that would be in these movies. The ladies seem nice, if that's what you're asking also. She seemed like a nice lady, yes, very talented at what she was doing.
They seem nice as we wink at each other. Yes.
Another scene full of performance. Words that we don't, slurs that we don't say anymore, which as we were watching, I was like clutching my white lady pearl.
Especially the Sean Connery 60s Bond films, you sort of have to...
You have to meet them where they are.
Yeah, you have to, again, like, I've talked about this many times on this podcast. In Goldfinger, the very next one, there is literally a scene where Sean Connery slaps a young girl in the butt and says, man talk.
Yeah, it's bad.
You know, so they are weird windows into, I guess, how males acted in the 1960s. And some of it, you're just like, oh boy, okay. But you know, they won the war and that's how they smoke their cigars, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know.
What's fun about this particular scene is that the fight is very bad. It's very poorly executed.
Which one? The cat fight, particularly the cat fight.
All the fights in this movie are bad.
Yes.
All fights in movies pre-maybe 1996 are pretty bad.
What's the movie in 1996 that you think clearly
I'll tell
delineates
you, I don't know. I don't know what year this movie came. When did Rob Roy come out?
Like 89, I think.
Okay, then maybe it's 1990.
You think the delineation is Rob Roy?
I think Rob 95. Right. So I was close.
I think
Rob Roy is where you get the first inklings of like a contemporary sensibility of how we think fights are in movies. Because the fight between the nice belly dancing ladies here is how people actually fight. As Jason pointed out when we watched it, it's just a bunch of people flailing around and hoping for the best outcome. Mm-hmm. But cinematically, it's not as compelling to watch when you're used to like an Avengers fight or a John Wick fight or something like that.
You're talking about like fighting for the camera.
Choreographed, like, and we've got the nice sharp sound effects because we kicked a side of beef in a freezer somewhere. You know what I mean? Shout out to all the Foley artists.
That is something I always forget about 60s movies is the loud cracks of punches and slaps and knives, and they're just so loud.
I mean, at the beginning of this movie, when Bond slaps something out of Sylvia Trench's hand, it sounds like he's backhanded her across the room. It's very loud.
It does. Mike, this is about the halfway point of the movie. So... You know, I don't want you to fully give away your rating on this movie, but like we get to the Romani action sequence here. You know, we're full Istanbul times. Are you in? Are you having a good time at this point? Are you a little like, when are they going to get to this lector? How are you feeling? I'm just curious. If it is your first viewing?
Well, I was like when you have a child, oftentimes you watch a movie in parts.
Oh, okay.
So I did sort of stop here. I watched part of it in one night, and I was feeling like I wasn't so like excited to see it. It felt like a sleepier movie, which is understandable. So I was definitely like, I feel like we'll pick up with like some 60s action probably in the second half, but I was definitely feeling like I'm a little sleepy, but I'm a little sleepy constantly now as well, because I keep bringing it up, but I'm a dad. Look, that's what happened. So I wouldn't say I wasn't not enjoying it or anything. I was definitely just like, okay, we'll see what happens next when I pick it up again, versus like going like, oh my God, I'm staying up. I'm going to watch the rest of it.
So we get through this Romani fight. Red Grant, Robert Shaw saves Bond, as we see in this, because he wants to kill Bond.
Well, Bond villains are classically polite. So.
Yes. There is a funny beat here. Remember the action sequence I told you about where like the Bond theme was blaring?
Yeah.
And Bond asked for a different room, and they were like, well, the only room we have left is the bridal suite. Mm-hmm. So when we cut back to the next time Bond's in his hotel, he's in the bridal suite.
He's in a completely different room.
He actually took the bridal suite.
Yeah.
Which is very funny. And this is where Tatiana just sneaks into his bed and is just like, hello, I'm here. And, you know, he points a gun at her for a lot of this time.
Sure.
But Ashley, I want to ask you, you know, you're part of this, you know, Smersh Spectre plot to to get James Bond. Does it not seem like she just climbed up the side of the building to sneak into his bed? How did she get in that room?
Yeah, for sure. Especially in a world where there's no cameras. She definitely just climbed in the window. Honestly, she probably just, because one thing that old timey movies and stories have taught me is that there's no security anywhere. Mm-hmm. She might have just gone to the front desk and been like, I need to get into James Bond's room. And they honestly might have just let her up there.
I'm his wife.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You know, in an era where not everyone carried all of their identification with photos on them all.
That's fair.
I don't think it would have been as hard as it is now.
Interesting. All right, so Tatiana meets Bond. They talk about the Lecter, and they figure out the plan of what's going to go on here. And Spectre makes a porno film of them.
Yep.
Which is a plot that I completely forgot about.
You also have to consider, particularly in the modern era, that like whoever's Q has done almost nothing but watch James Bond have sex with people for years and years and years missions.
I honestly think that Q constantly watches Bond, and actually it's like, I think that's Q's kink. I really do. I seriously do. I mean, at this point,
you're inspiring fan fiction across the internet now.
it's literally like there is a Roger Moore Bond film where the very last scene is they're trying to figure out where Bond is. And and they turn on the camera. It's like a submarine or a boat or something like that. And they turn on the camera and Bond is literally having sex with a woman. And M says the line like, what is he doing? And I think Q's line is like something to like giving the British lip or something or keeping the British stiff upper lip or something like it. He's basically making
it's an adult joke.
Yeah, that's end of Moonraker too. The end of Moonraker is the same thing where it's like they turn the camera on and like he's like Bond is going in for reentry or something.
that actually happens a lot in the Roger. There's a Pierce Brosnan one too as well where they turn on the camera and they're like they're heat seeking Bond and they see like. The heat is getting bigger, and then a leg comes out, and then they realize it's Bond having sex.
The end of every single Pierce Brosnan movie is him getting laid.
Yeah, yeah.
Every single one. And like that slow fade out with the Vaseline on the lens.
Yeah.
It's very soap opera-y.
Well, it also just kind of makes me, it kind of just makes me sad for Daniel Craig because the end of Daniel Craig's ones were him just looking pensive the sky.
It's him quitting. It's him rage quitting.
He quits every movie. I'm done.
Yeah.
and Pierce Brosnan gets to like kiss these sexy ladies, so like I feel bad for Daniel Craig.
You know what, Daniel Craig is in the most critically acclaimed James Bond movies. I think he's doing fine.
I'm sorry, but that's not Moonraker. So
I like
Moonraker. I think we can all agree that Moonraker is the critically acclaimed Bond film. Once you see that space fight, you want nothing else. All right, so basically they steal the Lecter and they get on the train. And the train is where a lot of this movie spends the rest of its time. And what I think is the real climax of this movie. And I want to talk about the train. We're going to take a quick ad break, but I want to talk all about the train right after this. All right, Geek History Lesson, talking about From Russia with Love and Trains, Mike Carlson. We are on the train for about, I don't know, maybe 20 more minutes after this, at this point in the movie. What did you think about this? Because Red Grant has been stalking James Bond this entire movie, killing people left and right. And now he finally gets to look at him through windows on a train and also like have dinner with him. What did you think of other? There's a lot of great cinematography in this movie. And I do like all the shots of like Red Grant looking through the windows of the train at Bond. I actually think those are really well done. And maybe because I'm just afraid of Robert Shaw, even though I know he's long past dead, I still think he could kick my ass as a corpse. But Mike, what did you feel about this sequence in the train that these two, the villain of the movie and the hero of the movie, are finally together, and there's this sort of tete-a-tete between the two?
I mean, it's fun. I really like it, and I think part of it is just like I'm such a big Jaws fan. It like the movie Jaws, not the character in James Bond Jaws.
Yeah,
Which
Why
I like as
both,
well.
Mike?
I like the
Why
character Jaws as well.
Also in Moonraker.
Sorry, I'm saying stupid stuff. Also in Moonraker. I would play as Jaws in GoldenEye as well, the video game.
That's true.
But
I see you're coming back for the
sort of like
episode.
Of course. I have to. I kind of feel like they did a decent job of sort of building up like anticipation for the meeting. And I like a movie in the 60s on a train. That makes me feel good in general too. So
it's
I like
supposed
that
to
setting.
Be the Orient Express, actually. They say that a couple of times.
Oh, is
I don't
it?
Know if it. I
oh,
don't
I
know if it
that.
Actually. I don't know if it actually is the Orient Express, but they...
Or it might be like a leg of it, right? Like a specific leg.
Yeah, but they say a couple of times that the train is supposed to be the Orient Express.
You think there's a mummy on it?
Let's hope. Well, let's hope.
Wow. So that's even better. I mean, I'm from like... From, yeah, what I was talking about, North by Northwest, or from like Hard Day's Night. I don't know. This just feels like a nice, comfortable 60s setting for a movie. So, yeah, I was into this and I thought it was fun. Even from, spoiler alert, Mission Impossible 7. I was like, that felt good when they're on the train.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like.
There's something about trains.
I like it.
Something about trains and spy movies. I think maybe because you're trapped.
It's that Cold War post, like World War II, that like as you know, North American Westerners, I think we all have this particular fascination with. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that in some universe, there's just one long train that every movie takes place in a different car. So one is like Strangers on a Train, and the next one is Hard Day's Night.
And one is Snowpiercer?
Yeah, one is Snowpiercer all the way to the end.
Yeah, that's good.
that's great. Fun fact, Robert Shaw does not speak in this movie until he's on the train and he's pretending to be Captain Nash when he's doing this super posh accent.
He's doing what honestly feels like an Ian Fleming impersonation.
I think he is doing Ian Fleming. A fun fact, so Ian Fleming, this is the last James Bond movie that author Ian Fleming is on the set for. So he dies before this movie is released as well. Again, I said this whole movie was tied with death. It's also tied to Ian Fleming's death. But Ian Fleming did not like Sean Connery's performance in Dr. No, but he did like it in this movie. And at his next James Bond movie that he writes before his death, he adds in the lineage that Bond is Scottish. Mm-hmm. He makes it canon that Bond is Scottish because he liked Sean Connery's performance.
It's a retcon.
What do you think about Bond figuring out that Captain Nash is not real because he orders red wine with fish? That's how Bond figures it out. This guy orders red wine with fish, and Bond's like, that's just too weird.
That is very Bondian, though, because like we talked about at the beginning, like he's obsessed with food, right? And Ian Fleming was obviously like very fixated on like, what's some exotic food that we can show these yokels in my book? And Bond definitely does that. But I don't think Bond is smart. Like, I don't think Bond is an intelligent person.
Interesting. Okay.
I ascribe to the like blunt instrument, like Judy Dench description of it all, but I think Bond is a great observer. And I think Bond knows what would give you away in like a classist kind of situation, which is very English. And like, yeah, you don't order red with fish. I mean, now someone's gonna be like, but this is actually really good because it's kind of meaty and you can drink it with the red. But like traditionally you order white with fish. So this does feel very Bondy.
Mike, can you order red with fish? I honestly don't know. Please educate. Gosh, you're a dad now. I feel you should.
High class.
You need to teach your kid these things. This is something you have to teach them now.
Well, when we go to like, when I take her to charm school, I'll find out which is the highest class one. And then I'll learn from them. I'll go to like a daddy daughter charm school and I'll learn.
And you'll come back and tell us.
Yeah. And then I'll let you know. It'll be a few years from now, but yeah. So this felt like an Adam West. This felt like an Adam West Batman kind of a like. He ordered red with, like, it felt like a very like, the deduction, like his like deducing of clues. It felt like that a little bit to me. But yeah, I guess it would make sense if that's such an odd order that maybe he would be suspicious.
Well, and then that leads to the close quarters fight.
This is the only good fight in the whole movie.
Between Bond and Red Grant. I mean, I actually really like it. It's one of the few, and you can tell that in Daniel Craig's Spectre, there's a fight between Daniel Craig and Dave Bautista that they're trying to sort of like mimic this fight, or they're trying to homage it.
And they give Dave Bautista even less lines in that movie.
I think he only has one line.
He says one word, and it's a swear.
But I really like this fight. I know it's very understated, it's very small, and when you compare it to movies nowadays, like again, like we were talking about the teaser, Mike, it doesn't have that punch, it doesn't have that buildup, but I think I just like that it's just like these two guys in basically a room the size of a closet hauling off on each other until one of them goes down, basically. And I guess also it's very cool that like you can really quickly tell that Red Grant is the better fighter. And he will kill Bond. And Bond, this seems very Bondian to me. Bond only wins because he tricks him. because he tricks him into doing the suitcase, into going after the $200 in his suitcase. He's like, oh, I got $200 in my suitcase. That sounds great to me, Bond.
He goes, this communist is probably greedy.
He's
but,
right.
But there's, but this is also like the part to me where like once he beats Red Grant and they get off the train, to me, the movie's over.
It's not.
That and this movie.
There's so much movie left.
This movie, I forget this. This movie keeps going. Mike, how do you feel about this? Because it feels like a fake climax to me. And I kind of want the movie to be done once he beats Red Grant.
I completely agree. I was like, okay, he's done. So it must be. And then I shouldn't do this, but sometimes, but I had rented this on YouTube and I like glance over and I'm like, the movie's not done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
That's the. So I was like, okay, well, let's see. We're going to see what happens next. We'll see what's going to go on. So yeah, I felt like, yeah, that's kind of like your, that's kind of the thing everybody's waiting for. I feel like that's the main thing. So
not
yeah,
the
once
Rosa
that's
Cliff
done.
It, yeah. I don't think anybody was like, oh, well, this movie can't end. Oh, you wanted that one?
I wanted it, but I didn't know I wanted it until I saw it.
I love that, makes that sense. Fight. And I love her death. Face like Lani Lanya is like I am from Three Penny Opera. Yep. She's at an absolute 15. Nobody told her she could beat us. I love her death.
Her slow, like she holds up her hand up against the wall and she slides. She's like,
it's the best. I love the knife in the shoe and she's just trying to kick him and she like has tight hammies. Like I really like
her
that
old
fight.
Her old age makeup I actually think is really good.
She's actually quite beautiful.
Before they get to that fight, I got to say that Bond stealing a flower truck might be the most James Bond thing ever. I just really think it's funny that he beats up this flower guy and takes his truck.
He's like, I'm just a workaday Joe. What did I do to you?
I'm just trying to sell roses, man. All right. So then we get to, of course, they're in Venice. We get the two lovers are together. Rosa Club. We got the Lecter. Everything is right. Sean Connery pulls out the porno and he does the weirdest, like, hand wave of all time in front of the camera.
which is
such an odd ending to this movie, which
it feels like they called cut and he just did that and then they just kept it in the movie.
Here's the other weird thing about that is you can tell that there's a lot of shots in this movie where they are actually like on a boat. They're actually in Venice. You can tell they're actually there. And then they'll cut into like close-ups. And they're clearly on a projection screen. And that hand is like clearly on a projection screen. So it's very odd. So that hand motion that ends the movie, that is the final shot of the movie, had to have been a reshoot. Or had to have been like, you know, we need something here, Sean. What do you got? Oh, I got this right here for you. That's yeah, I got to watch how I wave my hand. They're like, brilliant, Sean. That's why you're James Bond. And so that's the end of the movie. So this is the movie that, just to let you all both know that and everybody know that has a lot of the Bond tropes. This is the first Bond movie that ends with James Bond will return. And because they were basically already shooting Goldfinger, that's why they were like, oh, the next one's Goldfinger. Which is most of the Sean Connery ones tell you the next movie that's going to happen because they were literally already in pre-production. Here's some fun Bond trivia from this movie. This movie implies that Bond keeps Red Grant's Garrote watch or Garrote watch.
Garrote, excuse me.
The watch that strangles you because Bond has the same watch in two other Bond movies. So it's the idea that he saw Red Grant using this
and
was
like,
oh, that seems useful. I'm going to put it in my desk. And the AR rifle that Bond has that he takes apart and puts back together, the sniper rifle, it is the same rifle that is used by Tilly Masterson in the very next movie. So there are some implications that Bond sees the case in the very next movie and he goes, oh, it's hunting season, eh? And a lot of people are like, oh, that's because he had that same exact rifle.
It's definitely not because it was lying around Pinewood and they said, we already have this sniper rifle. Because, we don't need a new prop.
They didn't want to make a new prop. So. all right. So Ashley, without looking at my notes, I don't know if you've already peeked at it. And Mike, you can't see my notes, of course. I want you both to guess the on-screen body count of this movie. So I'm not talking about we're not counting like explosion. We're talking about people that we actually see either blow up or shot.
Okay, I heard you say this out loud when we were watching it. So this should be a Mike guess because I do know the answer.
Oh, okay. So then Mike, do you want to make a guess? Do you want me to give you an upper or a lower? To give you like a little bit of a help?
Do you want an upper or a downer? Do you want a Benny or what?
No, I don't need.
You want a smirchy
or
a
specker? I'll just guess.
All right.
I'm going to sink or swim on this, and I'm going to embarrass myself, but that's okay. I'm comfortable. I want to say that there's like 51 people die.
That, for a movie that's like 2 hours, that would be like half the movie's deaths. Not that high. Not that high.
There definitely are some Bond movies that get that high.
There are 21.
In my mind, in my mind, 21. The boats, in my mind, my memory of the boats, which I was watching very late, the boats were full of people. Yeah. So I was guessing there were 10 people on each boat, and that's where that came from.
We didn't bring this up earlier, but I do love that when Spectre comes up to him on the boat, they just have a bullhorn and they're like, "We know you're out there, Mr. Bond. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Come on, just give up already." We're Spectre. And like think that would make him give up. Mm-hmm. Oh shit, they found us. All right. Now we're here to rate the movie on a scale of 1 to 007. Of course, I'm taking this from the James Bonding podcast because, you know, they're just like the end all be all. But on a scale of 1 being the worst, 007 being the best, Ashley, let's start with you. What do you give From Russia with Love?
From Russia with Love is like in my top 5 James Bond movies.
Oh, okay.
I really love a John le Carré style actual spy story. And this is probably the closest that the Bond franchise offers me. Sean Connery, horrible human being, very handsome, very good James Bond in this movie. Lottie Lenya, icon, whom I very much love, kicks him to almost death at the end of this movie. So I'm going to give it a 6.5.
Ooh, okay. A 006.5.
But right. I can't give it a 7 because there's too many slurs.
Fair.
It made me uncomfortable.
Mike, where did you, first time viewing this movie, and again, you wanted it to be a little bit more silly. A scale of 1 to 7, what do you give From Russia with Love?
I would say that I would initially give it like a 4.5. 4.75, perhaps, but it's also like, I'm this way with movies sometimes where the second time I watch it, it's almost sometimes better if I know what it is. Like, so if it's like I went in the first time being like a little bit like wanting it to be a little more silly or like the James Bond movies I've seen, I feel like I probably will bump it up even the next time I see it. I guess that feeling where like I'll settle into it a lot easier the next time I see it. So I will say 4.75, but I don't, it's a sliding scale. Don't quote me. I may change when I watch it next.
Because you said that, someone's going to rush over to your Twitter right now and be like, "Have you watched it again? Has your opinions changed?"
I know they will do that. And I want to say, I want to say, first of all, I'm getting to it. I have to get through the box set first when it arrives at my house.
26 more movies for you to watch.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Jason, what's your 00 rating?
You know, it's funny. I'm a little bit like Mike a little bit. I like my Bond movies to be a bit fancier, but I do love, it's so interesting because this, you know, this is the second one. So this one is kind of different. They hadn't quite figured out what they wanted to do.
It's Goldfinger with a Formula's Perfection.
It's the very next one that is the Bond that you're thinking of, Mike, where it's like elaborate sets and a volcano lair and the you know, the ladies have weird names and their gadgets are off the rails and you know, and Roger Moore, I think, runs that off a cliff for a while when we go to space. In the cinema classic that is Moonraker. But you know, it is interesting that, like, I look at this one, especially rewatching it, and I kind of wish that maybe some of the future Bonds had tried to go back to this. Mm-hmm. That maybe we should have done, like, oh, here's a big one, here's a small one. Here's a big one, here's a small one.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some moments of this that it's really intriguing to see that they quite don't know what to do with him. I have to give this a 5.5. I'm giving this a 005.5. I think it's pretty good. I think it's a hair slow in moments, and I realize that that is very much a thing because it's a movie from 1963. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't think it's boring.
Yeah,
I don't. There's no point that I ever thought it was boring. There's just some moments where I'm just like, we're really spending a long time watching him look for bugs in his room.
The pacing, you know? The pacing is definitely strange.
Yeah. But like, you know, and then there is the big point where like when he kills Red Grant, the movie's over to me. Mm-hmm. Like it's done. Mm-hmm. We should have just hopped right to Venice, in my opinion. instead of like having a helicopter chase us and people in bullhorns be like, come on, give it up, buddy. But it's you know what? I had a good time. I will say, Ashley, I do think if you're looking at all 25 Bond movies, I do think that this is in the top half, not the bottom half of Bond movies. Mike, this, so I don't know if you know this, but From Russia with Love to a lot of people is considered to be the best. Some people consider this one to be the best Bond movie because of its like very serious tone, and it's very like, it's all the spy craft and slow moving. And you further admitted that you were like, okay, I'm a Bond fan that likes the big and the gaudy and the explosions and stuff like that. But let me ask you this. Somebody comes up to you down, you know, a couple years down the road, and you're talking about Bond movies after you've done your epic dad rewatch, and they say, From Russia with Love is my favorite Bond movie. Are you going to say, oh, that's fair? Or you're like, well, I don't know.
Are you going to respect their opinion, or are you going to not, Mike?
I'll be very rude to them, and I'll say, what are you?
You'll knife them with your knife shooter. Kind of
yeah. I can't believe you said that. Yeah, I'll understand that. It's a whole thing. There's a whole discussion about like the way you treat these characters that have been around for so long. And like we're talking about Batman, and it's like, there was a period where it's like, I think there's people that are like, it's the Batman Begins, it's the Pattinson Batman, and that's how it should be. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense to me that there would be a contingent of Bond fans that like, yeah, like the Daniel, like the first, like Casino Royale is much more grounded than the Pierce stuff was. So that makes sense to me. Would I make assumptions about the person's taste if they said that? I think I would. I think I would think they were probably a like, no fun stuff, no colorful nonsense. So maybe I would judge something silently about their taste, but I would say, oh, that's fair. I understand where you're coming from. It makes sense. And it's not, I don't think it's, I think it's a good movie. It's just, I understand something about them as a person now.
So, I think, you know, since this is the James Bond Jamboree episode of From Russia with Love, I have to ask you this. Is this going to make you want to seek out more Sean Connery Bond films, some of the earlier ones, or are you like, nah, I'm good. I'm good with my Moonraker.
No, I was saying earlier, I was like, this is another thing on the list of stuff that like I need to do. So it definitely felt like, oh yeah, okay, let's put this toward the top of like things I need to watch, so I can definitively say I've seen all of the James Bond films. So I can be another little expert man who acts like he knows everything about another film property. So yeah, I think for sure I was like, oh yeah, I would like to see. I need to see all of them now.
Well, as a little expert man, I just want to thank you, Mike, for joining us on this podcast. We have some more listener emails from all you guys that you sent in, and we're going to hear your thoughts on From Russia with Love. But first, we have to bid adieu to Mr. Mike Carlson because he has to go back to his daughter, and he has to go back to collecting some more Batman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toys, because you can't see this. We can see it into his room, and it's a beautiful museum and mausoleum to the mausoleum. Epic. It's a mausoleum to the epic mausoleum of turtles.
Right.
Mike, if they, you know, you have a podcast as well, but you want to tell our listeners where they can find you online and where they can listen to some of your amazing podcast.
Yeah, the podcast is called Podcast the Ride, and it's at every place that has a podcast. You can search it. It's about theme parks. I'm on Twitter at Fat Carlson. It's PHATCARLSON. Instagram is my real name, Michael R. Carlson. And that's basically, I'm not TikToking or anything. Not that I won't, I couldn't.
Not it's, yet.
I could do it if maybe, yeah, I was going to say it's possible.
Maybe your TikTok should be James Bond.
That's, TikTok.
Should be James Bond. Maybe it should be your view through James Bond.
New Bond, like watched all the Bonds or something. And it's just new me Bond like expert. Reacting to them. And then I do a little dance of some kind. I know that's what TikTok likes that. So yeah, that's possible.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us here on Geek History Lesson.
Of course. Sure. Thanks for having me.
And we're back. Geek History Lesson here, still talking about From Russia with Love. We had a great conversation with Mike Carlson, right, Ashley?
The best. We had so much fun.
It's too bad that we had to tell Spectre to kidnap him
and take him away.
Take him back to Spectre Island. Mm-hmm. Put him back in the trunk. Mm-hmm. Take him.
Oh, what a day for killing.
No, he's not going to get his 20 gold sovereigns.
Well, he's developing the theme park. So if he succeeds, he'll get his 20 gold sovereigns.
Oh, and you can understand what that is if you go listen to patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-N. Go listen to some GHL Extra. So we could not end this 60th anniversary celebration of From Russia with Love, celebrating our first James Bond Jamboree without hearing from you.
Yeah.
Now, we put out the call on Twitter, on Facebook, on Patreon, all various types for some voicemails from you all. And this is very interesting because this is the very first time in Geek History Lesson history in almost closing in on 500 episodes, folks. Mm-hmm. We're going to 500 mm-hmm. episodes. It's coming around the corner. Probably going to happen in like January, February of next year. Mm-hmm. Anyways, yes, we have been making preparations. Puckle up for that. So we, for the first time ever, are going to play some voicemails from you all live on the air in Geek History Lesson. Because, you know, what a better way to, you know, if there's any character that says, you know, people,
community,
come be a part of this podcast. It's James Bond.
Yeah, for sure.
The man who kills people, the man with the golden gun.
He's not the man with the golden gun.
But he kills the man with the golden gun.
Spoilers.
For a movie that came out in 1972. All right. So our first voicemail here comes from George Williams. And his message just says this. He says, your request for voicemail begs the question, what kind of a message would someone leave on James Bond's voicemail while he's on mission in Russia? And I got to tell you, George made it. Sent us a real humdinger.
Okay, so
here's the voicemail from George.
Hey, Mr. Bond, this is your neighbor Glenn from next door. Everything's going pretty good here. You know, I've been bringing in your newspaper. My son mowed the lawn in your backyard, like you asked, and your house is pretty good. Well, anyway, I'm just calling to let you know that my daughter, you remember my daughter Melissa? Yeah, she's a good kid. Well, I know you left in a hurry and you left your Aston Martin out in the driveway and when you took off and, you know, well, wouldn't you know it, but Melissa accidentally kicked her soccer ball into the driver's side door and broke the window and the ball bounced around in there. And I'm not really sure what happened, but the roof of your car flew off and then the passenger seat shot up about 20 feet in the air. When the roof came down, you know, it landed on the hood and it left a big dent. But, when the passenger seat came back down, it went back inside the car and bounced around a little. And I'm not really sure what happened, but a bunch of spikes came out of the trunk and, got all over the street. And, you know, Mrs. Bellamy, who, you know, she lives a couple doors down from you. I don't know if you know her or not, but, well, she drove over some of those spikes and, well, they completely ruined her tires. You know, she was pretty mad about it, so she called the police. And, you know, then when the police got here, one of the officers decided to open the trunk, so he flipped around some switches on the dashboard, hoping to open the trunk up. But instead of opening the trunk, some kind of machine gun came out from behind the headlights and shot a bunch of holes in your garage door. So, you know, long story short, the police towed your car away.
I doubt it.
They said they'd get in touch with you, but I just thought I'd call and give you a heads up. So I hope you're having a good time over there in Russia. I don't know what you're doing over there, but I hope everything's going well, and we'll see you when you get back. Bye.
The best thing about this is that George assumes that James Bond lives in, like, suburban Michigan or something like
that. Okay, I was gonna my quippy response. I love this.
No, George
A plus this plus
is
fan, plus.
This is fantastic. This is fantastic.
This reason we started with this one. James Bond lives in Chelsea, a very bougie area of London, and notably has a flat. So if there is a green space, like if there is a lawn to be mowed, that means it's a communal space. So I will say that George's son is probably doing the Lord's work, you know, looking after a bunch of people's lawns. And that's very, very sweet of him. But
Bond definitely knows Mrs. Bellamy. I'll tell you that.
Bond knows all the missuses because notably he likes women who are not single. So but if she's a missus, there's a good chance.
This was fantastic. I didn't expect anybody to take the voicemail literally.
I love it.
I will tell you, George sent in two of these.
Uh-huh.
And I might play the other one because he sent, there's another voicemail that is very in the world of this movie.
I also love the idea that Bond would be like, yes, I'm going to Russia. I will see you later. Well, you if that's a
he would tell
normal, commonplace for an Englishman to vacation.
But see, here's the smart thing, right? So he didn't give anything away because Bond actually goes to Istanbul.
Yeah, I guess so.
He tells his neighbor
he's going to
Russia,
Moscow or whatever. Yeah. You know what? Fair. Okay. I take back my snide remark about James Bond. Yeah. He's smarter than I thought.
All right. Our next voicemail comes from Robert English III.
Wow.
He said, I've been subscribed to the show since 2020. And he says, props to the best audio professors I know. But he brings up this idea of, is From Russia with Love the best introduction to Bond? Mm. So let's hear Robert English III here.
Thanks, Jason and Ashley, for having me on the James Bond Jamboree. I think From Russia with Love is actually the best introduction for a modern audience member to watch the old James Bond movies. Because first and foremost, this is a great Cold War film. It actually meets in the middle of the more serious Bond stories versus the more outlandish Bond stories. Dr. No has a lot of day for night shots. It's very slow. And when we get to the main villain, he has robotic hands. And in Goldfinger, the movie following this one, our villain has a sidekick with a razor hat and he wants to irradiate all the gold in Fort Knox. This story focuses on stealing a telegraph machine for code breaking. That's a very basic Cold War story plot, and it engages the audience because we're not distracted by all the outlandish aspects of the movie. The only outlandish spot in the film is Spectre Island, but you could just say this is to show the heightened danger that Bond is going into rather than just fighting the Soviet Union. This is actually the first film I've ever seen that, to my knowledge, influenced the original source material. The adaptation of Connery's performance was so good that Fleming himself retconned his own literary character to say, nope, the character was born in Scotland. He grew up in England to explain his posh English accent, but he's Scottish. This affected not only the fans and the creator himself. This is also Connery's personal favorite Bond movie, and who are we to argue with him? Thanks again for having me on the James Bond Jamboree.
Well, welcome. I'm so glad you came to the Jamboree. Yeehaw.
Look, why did you pick Jamboree?
Alliteration.
This is J.
Alliteration, yeah. By the way, countryness, again, because of Sheriff J.W. Peppa, is canon to James Bond. Ashley, I know you're a big fan of From Russia with Love.
Yep.
Do you agree with Mr. Robert English III here that this is the best? Well, let's leave it at Connery. Is this the best Connery film to show a modern audience member?
I think this is a really solid intro if you are someone who is only familiar with James Bond, like Pierce Brosnan or later, because that's kind of the era that, you know, because of my age, that I would consider sort of contemporary, like modern James Bonds. I think because that was a time that American studios got more involved in their distribution. I think it's probably a tie between this movie and Goldfinger. Mm-hmm. I think Goldfinger is a good introduction because it hits more of the tropes that people are looking for when you think of a post kind of 1990s Bond.
It's more polished too.
Yeah. But I like this movie better personally because it is a Cold War spy thriller. So like maybe if somebody isn't into some of the outlandish things about James Bond, this would be a good intro to kind of soften how silly it's going to get from here.
It is, again, it is the most spycraftian Bond film, this one. Like, even to this day, it is the most spy. Because even the Daniel Craig movies,
they're less grounded than this.
Yeah, and they're more like Bond just shoots things. He just shoots and punches things.
But if you know somebody who maybe, like, enjoys The Americans or who just watched The Imitation Game, like or is into World War II, I think this is a pretty solid intro.
Yeah, yeah. All right, our next voicemail comes from Jono Phillips. This is Jono Phillips.
Good night, Jason and Ashley.
Good night. Or good day.
Thinking back on From Russia with Love, it's honestly one of my least favorite of the James Bond films. But I also have a fondness for it, as it was the movie that I watched on my first proper date with my partner, who I've now been married to for 9 years. So it's a bit of a mixed emotions one. Has a lot of fondness for that, but yeah, never really inspired me, that film. Also, talk about Killer Croc. Thanks.
There's no request in the James Bond Jamboree. Jono, you slow your roll. No, it's fine. Jono, I also want to. Did I pick up your dialect right? Are you an Australian, my friend? And if so, how close do you live to Perth?
Yeah, are you our Perth contingency? Love hearing from the international listeners.
Yeah.
Sorry, North American listeners. We appreciate you, but y'all are norms.
So it's interesting because he calls us his least favorite Bond, even though it is the one that brought him together with his partner.
What an adorable. I was like truly devastated. You want, when things are your favorite, you want other people to
I'm just going to say, if we do another James Bond Jamboree, that Jono, you have to send another voicemail in and you have to tell the story.
Yeah.
Of why did you watch From Russia with Love on this first date?
Yeah. Was this your pick? Was this your partner's pick? Yeah. Like, how did this, did you go see this at a second? I have questions.
Yeah. Were you guys just zipping through Amazon Prime and it was there? Mm-hmm. Like, how did this become the first date movie?
Because I don't think it's one of the most famous James Bonds. Mm-hmm. So if it was at one of those second run movie theaters, I would more expect to see something like maybe Goldfinger coming into contention, or even Moonraker, because Moonraker obviously popular
for its camp.
Yeah. So we want to know more. But I also want to say that I appreciate your point of view and a diverse point of view, and it's something that I appreciated about having Mike with us, because it's good to have a well-rounded view of these movies. But I appreciated Jono's story as well, because it illustrated how something can maybe not be to your taste, but still kind of hold this important place in your personal lore. I thought that was really neat.
No, when we were looking for guests for this, I mean, Mike Carlson, I've known him for quite a long time. And
we've been hoping to get Mike
on. And we've been trying to get him on in various episodes here. And the minute he told me he hadn't seen this movie, I was like, oh, then
this is going to be great.
This has got to be, because again, it's Ashley and I, again, Ashley and I have said this several times, where we're both big fans of all the Bond movies. Mm-hmm. And even the worst Bond movie for mm-hmm. me has a scene that I love in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I get enjoyment even out of the bad ones.
Same.
Because I just I like the style, and I like the way they're very comfort food to me, because mm-hmm. I know I'm going to have a good time, even if it gets really stupid and really goofy.
Yeah, I agree.
Which Bond does.
Definitely does. Yeah. More than one era.
Your next voicemail comes from Tom Trainer here. And here's his, it says, it's Killarney Pass.
Hi, Jason and Ashley. Tom Trainer here. My question for you is, which actor do you feel best personified the character of James Bond, and why? Not necessarily your favorite, but best representation of the character. Thanks for all you do. Bye.
So I said Killarney Pass because that's what Tom named his file, and I thought maybe he was going to bring up some fact about it, but he did not. He tricked us.
I'm going to say that he recorded it on Killarney Pass. I don't know.
I'm going to bet that is.
I don't know wheremst that is in the world. Also, Tom, one of our OGs, longtime listener, who really holds it down in the Patreon. So hey, Tom, thanks for the voicemail.
So Ashley,
yeah,
he's asking not who is our personal favorite Bond, but which Bond do we think is objectively,
yeah,
I guess, best embodies Bond.
Yeah. So I'm a big read the book first. I'm big on source material. Mm-hmm. So I think from that standpoint, I'm going to give it up to Timothy Dalton, because I do think Timothy Dalton is pretty criminally underrated. I think that in the discussion of who is the best or who are people's favorite James Bond, I find it hilarious that a lot of people put the Dalton movies and his portrayal towards the bottom, because Pierce Brosnan is literally right there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Timothy Dalton is the closest thing to literary Bond. So for that reason, I'm going to say, in an objective ranking, I think I have to give it to Dalton for best Bond.
Mm.
Yeah. Not my favorite. I mean, he's among my favorites.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to give it to him.
I mean, Dalton is literary Bond walked out of the books.
Pretty much, yeah.
And
literary Bond is stodgy.
Yes, and if you read any of the interviews of Timothy Dalton playing Bond, he says that he intentionally chose that. I mean, Dalton is a good Bond.
Yeah.
And Dalton should have gotten more movies.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that, yeah, because I agree with you, because I actually think that both of his movies are pretty good.
I do too. They're not perfect. And he carries a lot of the silliness in those movies.
But I think I have to go back to Connery.
I knew you were going to pick Connery.
Well, because it's the simple fact that, like, Connery has something.
He sets the mold, too, that everybody else is working in.
Connery, even from watching From Russia with Love, Connery has this subtext of just kind of F you the entire movie. And he has it in every movie. And it's something that none of the other Bonds, even Daniel Craig gets the closest, but none of the other Bonds have ever been able to get to Connery. And I say to this point that I'm like, this, to me, I think it's Connery is a big reason why these movies blew up.
I agree. Really a think different. It's I don't think a different actor. I think it would have been like a curiosity, and I think it still would have been a cultural moment. But like, I don't know if.
And fun fact: one of the original actors that was considered for Dr. No was Timothy Dalton.
Yep.
But he was 21 years old.
Way too young. Way too young. For me, Bond is like late 30s. Mm-hmm. Mid-30s to mid-40s kind of character. Yeah.
Well, Connery's 35 when he takes up the role.
Exactly. I think part of it is because Connery did go on to like inspire some things about the literary character, but I think a huge part of it is because Connery was raised like working class and learned how to be fancy and quote-unquote upper class, and that is...
he's the son of a construction worker.
When I think of James Bond, like that is a quality that I think, and I think Connery carries that. I think that's kind of where that F you attitude comes from that you're speaking about.
Yeah, I agree. So I would say that I think objectively, Dalton might be the best Bond to portray the character, but I just got to give it to Connery. It's hard to beat the OG.
It is.
Really.
And we're still chasing this. Even something like, even a character like Jason Bourne or Ethan Hunt or Eggsy, like they are all chasing that portrayal.
Yeah. There's just something about, you know, Connery broke the mold and it's the same
bad thing. Bad man, good performance.
Yeah. It's the same thing as like, I think it's the same thing as why like people to this day have the nostalgic love of Adam West and even Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it's the fact that like, Keaton is basically the first movie Batman.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of people. So it's going to be hard for anybody to like be
And Adam West is the first on-screen Batman.
Yeah. And
outside of the
And Adam West is sort of also a movie Batman as well. 100%. The real movie Batmans are those serial guys that are back in the 30s.
But, yeah.
But like for a lot of people, it's hard to beat anybody as Keaton, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's that same thing with Connery as Bond. It's just like, or even your first Doctor in Doctor Who. Like whoever's your first is hard to beat. So we have another voicemail here from Kyle McDonald. And I had to include this because Kyle is from Kansas.
Hey.
So here we go. Here's Kyle.
Hi, Professors Jason and Ashley. My name's Kyle. I live in a small town in South Central Kansas.
Where?
And I've been a Mind University student since 2014 when a buddy of mine told me about your show, and I have been listening ever since. I love all of the work you guys do. Can't wait to see what comes up in the future. I am, however, impatiently waiting for the third installment to the Jupiter Jet comics.
So are we.
Also, I love From Russia with Love. It is one of my favorite James Bond movies. Yes. It's also one of the first ones I ever bought. I bought it on VHS at my local grocery store because their video rental area was being closed down and they had it on sale for $5.
Ooh, nice.
So I thought, well, what the heck? I'll buy it. And I just loved it. I've loved it ever since. I watch it probably once a year. Again, I love your stuff. Can't wait to see what comes up. Hope you guys have a wonderful time.
Well, Kyle, thank you for being a listener since the original OG.
Where are you from, Kyle? Yeah, where are you from?
We're in South Central Kansas. Are you know somewhere south of Wichita? So where are you? Where are you? Yeah. Are you in Hutchinson? Are you in? I can't remember any more names of towns from that area. Are you in Emporia? Are you are you in El Dorado? Are you somewhere in that area? Like that's where I'm throwing out names there. You know, it's interesting, Kyle.
What a fun origin story for how you encountered this movie for the first time.
Thank you for the shout out for our comic book, Jupiter Jet. We're eagerly awaiting, you know, volume three as well.
Yeah, we're eagerly awaiting complications when spoil themselves.
Yeah, yeah. You can look it up online. There are complications with the publisher. But yeah, your question about the VHS and From Russia with Love, Ashley, I don't think have you ever owned any of the James Bond movies?
I mean, I owned Casino Royale. Okay. And,
but you had it on DVD?
Yes.
Okay. The first Bond.
Did we have a James Bond cassette tape in my house growing up? Maybe. I never watched
it. Okay. I never owned any of the James Bond movies on VHS. The ones I owned were, they did these like DVD box sets before Daniel Craig and after Pierce Brosnan. And I had, there were three of them. And I think you got like, five. You got like five or six in each one, depending. And I kind of hated it because at the time they were not in chronological order. So it wasn't like, randomized.
Yeah. Random selection.
And the one that I bought was the one that had Goldfinger. But I got lucky because it had Goldfinger and you had You Only Live Twice. And it had, I think, Tomorrow Never Dies. Mm-hmm. The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, so you got some pretty good ones in there.
I think I had The Living Daylights, mm-hmm. and then it had one of the Roger Moore. I think it had like, not Moonraker. I think it had like For Your Eyes Only or something like that. But I would have rather been able to like buy each one. I would have rather got, here's the Connery, here's the Moore, here's the...
Well,
but
they
I think
definitely they wanted, did that to package the ones that they thought people, oh, I'll buy this for Goldfinger with some of the other ones.
They
that,
wanted people to buy all three is what they wanted to do. But that's very interesting because, I've never owned a James Bond film on VHS. So that's really cool, I think. And I didn't know.
Do you still have it also?
What?
Kyle, do you still have your VHS?
Oh. Okay.
Is that something that you've kept or did you let it go when it became Jurassic technology?
Oh, I probably did. Okay, so our next voicemail comes from Fabio DeVito. And I just want to give everybody a shout out, a quick warning here. The audio quality on this is not 100%. So if you're listening to headphones, maybe you want to turn down the volume a little bit. I'm going to try to ride this a little bit. But Fabio sent this email, again, another international listener. Mm-hmm. And Fabio had a great message. And I definitely had to include it. But mm-hmm. I just want to warn you that he's kind of peaking in a couple places. So if you're listening on AirPods or iPhone, in
just
your ear,
like knock it down a couple notches.
Yeah, yeah. It might. I'm going to turn it down. I'm going to try to write it, but mm-hmm. I'm just giving you a warning here. But Fabio's message is great. Even with the audio quality, I had to include it.
Okay.
So here is Fabio. Just loading. It's loading.
Hey guys, my name is Fabio DeVito and I'm speaking from Brazil. Yes, I'm a Brazilian listener and I have been listening to the Geek History Lesson for a while. I love you guys, I love the podcast, and you are like my closest friend when I talk about the nerd stuffs. I'm here to bring a curiosity about the From Russia with Love from Brazil. Here, the movie is very famous and we don't know him about this name. Here, we call him like Moscow contra 007, something like 007 against Moscow. Which for me is more like a hardcore name. What do you think about that?
Yeah!
And talking about the movie, I remember that was my first movie of the franchise that I watched without Pierce Brosnan. And I love it. I always remember to watch that movie with my parents. But even more, despite the movie, I remember the video game inspired by it was a huge trend among my friends. Most part of people think about GoldenEye on Nintendo 64 when we talk about 007 video games. But for me, From Russia with Love for PS2 is the best of them. Bye-bye from Brazil. And I think that's it, guys. Thank you for the podcast From Brazil with Love.
Fabio, thank you so much for that message. It's so kind.
Fabio, you have the coolest accent.
There's a lot of good stuff in there we got to talk about.
But one, most importantly, you got a guest room, you got a guest house, you want to host your professors.
We're not going from Brazil with love yet. But yes, I remember that video game too. I would play the hell out of that video game if they re-released it. I really wish they would. It was only on PS2. I played the hell out of it. I loved it. The animation was great. And again, the fact that they got Sean Connery to come back and do it was really interesting.
But you said he sounds like an old man.
Yeah, she's very, hello from Russia with love. He did it. There's like interview. You can find interviews on YouTube. With him. But it's like the animation mm-hmm. is so good because it's young Connery.
Yeah, and it's the
movie, and you do fight Red Grant, and you get, and they expanded, of course. Like, there's a tank level. Like, to get to the gypsy fight, like, you fight a tank or something like that. No, that's not a
Romany.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. I really apologize.
And that's what they say in the movie. I understand.
Yes, I've been trying to be correct about that, and I totally apologize to our listeners. But yes, to the Romani fight and stuff like that. I do love Fabio talking about, like, it's called 007 versus Russia. Russia or Moscow.
Which is funny because Moscow is like, I know it's called From Russia with Love, yep. but like,
it's an odd title.
It's not really that Russia. I think 007 versus Moscow is a great title. Honestly, in any language, I think that's a title that could be reused for a film. They probably wouldn't today.
You know, besides...
But it's a great title.
Besides The Living Daylights, this is one of the few... Well, and Spy Love Me. This is one of the few James Bond movies where he's just fighting Russia.
Yes, which...
Like, he's not really fighting Spectre or a weird rich guy.
Which in 1963 would have very much been of the... Which is weird, though, because, like, you know, Schmirch is definitely mentioned, and Spectre is present. But yeah, he's not like fighting, you know, the Kremlin or something like that over the course of the movie. But yeah, I mean, the Portuguese title is very cool. Very fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much from Brazil. And then our final voicemail to cap it off is George Williams here, who, again, took the voicemail game very literal again, very simply with the question, how did Rosa Klebb gain access to the hotel room James and Tatiana shared in Venice? And here is that voicemail.
Hello, this is Glenn from the Hotel Daniele here in Venice, and I am just calling to let you know that we are never going to hire any housekeepers or any other hotel staff from your temp agency again. That housekeeper you sent over this morning, Rosa Klebb, I guess is her name. Well, she was the worst housekeeper ever. She actually tried to kill one of our guests this morning by stabbing him with some kind of a poison dagger in her shoe. And the only thing that prevented her from actually killing him was that the guest's girlfriend was able to shoot Mrs. Klebb before she could get him. I don't know which of your employees does background checks on these types of temp workers, but whoever it is, well, they sure dropped the ball on this one. Based on what the police were saying, it sounds like she was some kind of an undocumented alien from Russia, and they have no idea how she got into the country. But, you know, being an illegal Russian immigrant, that's exactly the kind of thing that you should be able to figure out when you're doing a good background check. Don't be surprised if you hear from our lawyers, but again, we at the Hotel Daniele are not hiring any more temp workers from you guys again. Goodbye.
I love that he actually got the name of the hotel. That's really rad.
George really went above and beyond. Hey. We love a performer. George, thank you so much for both opening and closing this segment.
I'm sorry, George. I'm putting the gauntlet down that if we ever do a future James Bond Jamboree, you have to do a voicemail like this every single time. You cannot send in a voicemail just you chatting with us now. You have raised the bar, and now you have to jump over it every time. These are great. These are so fantastic. This has been just a great episode. Don't forget, guys, that you can subscribe and listen to us wherever you find your podcasts, on Apple and Spotify and SoundCloud and Spotify. There are questions now. You can review us over on Spotify. Ashley, where can they find us on social media?
You can find us at geekhistorylesson.com, on facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, on Instagram @geekhistorylesson, on Twitter @GHLpodcast, and on TikTok @geekhistorylesson.
That's right. Ashley, where can they find you on TikTok?
You can find me on TikTok and everywhere else at Ashley V. Robinson. The V is very important.
And you can find me on TikTok at Jason Inman Writer, or at jasoninman.com for any of my books and various stuff like that, like copies of Jupiter Jet over there. And now it's time for
Stick Around.
Ashley.
Yes.
You like this movie?
I like this movie.
You like Red Grant?
I do.
Robert Shaw.
Sure.
I think he's a great villain. Doesn't talk until like an hour and 10 minutes into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where does Red Grant stack in your list?
Ooh.
of the greatest Bond villains?
Well,
like, is he a top five? Is he, because there again, there's only 25. Is he in the top 10, top 15? Where do you put him in best Bond villains?
Here's the thing. He is one of those characters who's like debatably can be categorized as a villain or a henchman.
Technically, he could be the henchman because some people will say that Rosa Klebb is the real villain of
some
this movie.
Some people would also say that
Tatiana, you know,
Blofeld, Coombe Spectre is the villain of this movie.
That's true. I make the argument that Blofeld is not, because Blofeld and Bond never meet.
I would agree with
and
that.
And I think you can't be a villain of a Bond movie unless you meet Bond.
I also think you could have multiple villains. Like, I don't think it has to be one villain
You're a Joel Schumacher, if you will, of Batman Forever, if you're like doubling up the villains.
I'll take that. Okay. Sure, I'll be Joel Schumacher.
He was a talented filmmaker.
Yeah.
That was a compliment. Not a dig.
No. I was like, yeah, I'll take that.
He also made Phone Booth. Have you seen Phone Booth?
No, he also directed a bunch of like truly great episodes of television.
Phone Booth is Colin Farrell's trapped in a phone booth for 24 hours or for basically the whole movie. It's 2 hours of Colin Farrell in a phone booth.
Honestly, sounds pretty good.
It's actually not a bad movie.
Still haven't seen it. I'm Joel Schumacher, and I will say
hi, Joel. Joel, I thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Joel.
Thank you for having me.
Now your voice got to be a lot higher.
Thank you for having me.
Not that high. He was kind of up here.
It was kind of Paul-Lindy nasally.
Thank you for coming on the podcast, Joel Schumacher.
You're welcome.
I really loved the nipples on everything. That was
me
great.
Too.
Great choice. And the neon.
Yeah.
So,
well, my yes.
What do you think about Red Grant?
as you're aware, my payment for coming on is to see your nipples before the end of the show.
Fine with that.
I, Joel Schumacher, think that Red Grant is definitely like a top 15, maybe a top 10 Bond villain.
I think
he's definitely up there.
Okay.
I as Ashley. Would probably rank Rosa Klebb higher. Just, I really like her. But I think Robert Grant is definitely, like a top tier Bond villain for sure.
Red Grant.
Did I call him Red Green?
You said Robert Grant. And the actor's name is Robert Shaw. Yeah.
Most people,
you may not recognize him. And if you haven't at this point, I hope you have. You know, Robert Shaw famously played Quinn in Jaws.
It's catching.
Oh boy. This is a pandemic of mispronunciations.
Yeah.
But that's probably the most famous role that he's ever known for is he's Quinn in Jaws.
Yeah. He's also been in 100 million other things.
And he looks nothing like he does in that movie. But one of the greatest actors, I think, of all time.
No, he looks like the replicant from Blade Runner.
Blade Runner?
Yeah. In
Rutger Hauer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looks like Rutger Hauer in this movie.
You'd put Rosa Klebb higher than Red Grant.
I would.
But
yes.
Red Grant would be in the top 15?
I think so.
See, it's interesting because
it's hard to do without a list. It's hard to do Bond villains off the top of your head.
I don't want to do a list because I want to give to the listeners that we could do a James Bond Jamboree episode that is specifically best Bond villains.
Yeah.
Because here's the real thing. I actually think there aren't that many good ones.
I agree.
I'm going to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think there's a handful of good ones.
And because of that,
a bunch of silly ones.
For me, Red Grant is in the top five.
See, I don't know. I would need a list to say top five.
In my headcanon, Red Grant is it simply for the fact that this entire movie is Red Grant is one step ahead of Bond the entire time.
Yeah, Bond is fairly reactive in this movie.
Yeah. Like, so he is smarter than Bond most of this movie. In fact,
even every villain is smarter than Bond.
That's true. and there is a gag, like it is funny, like my favorite Bond movie, Goldfinger, Bond is along for the ride that entire movie. And that is actually something that Sean Connery brought up in later movies that he was like, hey, I want Bond to be more active.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know. I like
a lot of spycraft is waiting, watching, picking your moment.
That's correct. And there's a lot of that in this movie.
Yeah.
And that's Red Grant. Red Grant basically is like, I'm going to let James Bond do my job for me.
Yeah.
And then once he has the Lecter, I'm just going to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty smart plan.
Not a bad plan at all, honestly.
Not a bad plan. And I just have to keep him alive because the hardest part of this is getting the Lecter out of the embassy.
Yeah, exactly.
So
why not have someone else do it?
Why not have somebody else do it? Because everybody else is going to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think Red Grant.
That's why you think Red Green is an all-time great James Bond villain.
Red Green would be a fantastic James Bond villain. And the reason why is because I'm here. Hashtag James Bond has never been to Canada. And hashtag James Bond should go to Canada.
He should go to Canada.
He's never been to Australia either.
Should go to Australia.
And he should go to Australia. Never been either.
I mean, if you're English, don't you want to do your Commonwealth tour? Come on.
Bond's been to America plenty of times, mainly Vegas.
Mainly Vegas.
A couple of times in New York.
Yeah, but never James Bond in New York.
And then he spent a lot of time
in Kentucky.
In Kentucky.
Yeah. In the South.
Yep. With Goldfinger.
Yep.
On a horse ranch.
Yep.
When Felix was getting Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Golfing and stuff.
No, he was golfing in Scotland.
Were they golfing in Scotland?
They were golfing in Scotland.
Mm, my bad.
No. In Kentucky, it was just sitting around drinking mint juleps at the horse farm.
That's right.
And then Felix Leiter, lazy bum, was getting Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yep.
And then driving down the road, that I'm not joking. He's literally eating Kentucky Fried Chicken in Goldfinger.
Yep.
In Kentucky.
Product placement. Yep.
At Fort Knox. But yeah, James Bond should go to Canada.
He should.
Thank you for coming to my lecture here. And thank you for listening to this James Bond Jamboree episode of Geek History Lesson. I am Jason from Kansas, still with love, Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson, and Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
From Russia with love, I end this podcast.